So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
It's a special edition of Review Away. I'm John Pollock here in Toronto, Ontario, joined by Wei Ting, who's joining us via phone line. And where in the world is Wei Ting today?
Hello, John. Hello, all my fellow listeners all around the world. I am calling from the beautiful city of Minneapolis, Minnesota today.
Wow. And you're there on...
in the United States of America.
This is amazing. This is our first... cross-border edition of Review Away. I feel
it wouldn't have been cross-border if a couple days ago, John, we did this podcast, because you yourself had spent some time this week in this great country that we call the United States.
Yes, I was in Las Vegas this past week, Wei, for the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion. As well, I made my way out to the Tap Out Gym, and I'm sure that once both of us return, maybe we can go more in depth to our travels.
Yes.
Over the past week, because a lot of fighting action, and potentially, Wei, you might be running into a former WWE champion whose name we won't disclose in case
that does not occur. I'm not going to see Brock Lesnar, John. Don't even.
Well, you just ruined it right there, Wei.
Well, of course, if it's not going to happen, I don't want to get people's hopes up.
Well, you're going to his gym, and there's a chance he could be there. He does have a fight July 3rd, so.
Yeah, but I think he trains in North Dakota or something. I don't know.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, we can always hope. Just like I hope that this inaugural NWA TNA event would be thumbs up, but we'll see how that turns out. We're going to get right into the review right now, Wei. It took place June 19th, 2002, from Huntsville, Alabama. Actually didn't take place in Nashville, because their first show, they decided to run it in a 15,000-seat arena. Brilliant. So we start the event off, Wei, and it's the classic Memphis Open that you might see if you watch the Fight Network and watch old Memphis wrestling. And then it bursts into flames, and we get the NWA TNA logo to signal the evolution of the NWA brand, Wei. And then the first man introduced on an NWA TNA broadcast is Don West, who then brings out Ed Ferrara, who is a fat white man dressed in dreadlocks. And at this
what was going on with Ed Ferrara at the time? Why did he look like Rob Zombie?
I have no idea if the dreadlocks were legit or not. They looked like they were real, but they had to have been extensions, and just because the man was not known for his hair. And just
why would he do this to the public image?
I was asking that question for this overall pay-per-view, but we'll talk about that later. He looked atrocious, and it suited the theme of the broadcasting duo of Don West and Ed Ferrara, because thankfully Ferrara then throws to Mike Tenay at ringside, who is wearing a bow tie, no dreadlocks, and is ready for this evolution of the NWA. And all I can say is Mike Tenay was the MVP on this show, in my opinion, because he is he was like the sane person in the asylum, which is what they later called the TNA home base, funny enough.
Right.
Tenay says that tonight is about celebrating history, Wei, and tonight's main event will feature a gauntlet for the gold match to crown the new NWA champion. So it's fitting, Wei, that we have a giant stipulation match to launch TNA.
Yeah, well, we're trying to respect history, and what better way to do it than have a Royal Rumble.
Exactly.
And then another, some other type of match to, for the world title.
Take a WWE concept to present your alternative product.
Yes.
Brilliant.
What is this match, John? What is this match?
Well, it's going to be a Battle Royal, Wei. As you said, Royal Rumble style, where every 90 seconds a new participant will come in. And then when they're down to two participants, it becomes a singles match. And at this point, Ferrara notes that tonight's show is, quote, Darwinism in action. I'm sure Charles Darwin was looking down on the world in June of 2002 and pointing to the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, Alabama, as the site of evolution in progress, Wei.
Yeah, well, this is a very scientific show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We then go to a very young-looking Jeremy. They didn't give out his full name, just Jeremy Borash, who is in the ring and introduced legends Harley Race, Dory Funk Jr. Then out comes Jackie Fargo. And at this point, Mike Tenay was trying to give a bit of a backstory for all of these legends and their credentials. And Jackie Fargo...
What can you say about Jackie Fargo, the biggest star of Southern wrestling? How about this? He was a first ballot Wrestling Observer Hall of Famer, Ed Ferrara.
Wrestling Observer? What's that?
Wrestling Observer. It's a very famous newsletter in this business.
I'm hearing you, but it's all pops and buzzes. I have no idea.
Ferrara then act confused as to what the Wrestling Observer was, and Mike Tenay clarified that it was a very respected newsletter in the wrestling industry. This was fantastic, I thought.
I love it. I mean, you and I personally, because, I mean, we're both big fans of Dave and the website, and so... For those of you who are members of the Wrestling Observer message board, it is an endless stream of wrestling comedy. And so any mention of the Wrestling Observer in any Dana White's conference or whatever, I just immediately love.
Other legends to come out were Bob Armstrong, Corsica Joe, who just passed away recently, his wife Sarah Lee, Bill Behrens, Ricky Steamboat, who was the final one to come out, and he's carrying the NWA title. And then Ferrara asks, what is this, the Cauliflower Alley Club? And I laughed at that reference as I just returned from that very event.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's right.
I noted here that Mike Tenay was carrying this broadcast. Don West probably got four words in on this pay-per-view. I didn't understand his role. You had two color men that were just anchors to Mike Tenay. I hated Ed Ferrara. I could not stand him on this show. At least Don West, it was just short spurts. And I think he would even admit he was terrible during the early days of TNA. He had never done wrestling before.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to know what was the thought behind putting this this man just being in infomercials on this.
Well, that was it, Wade. Vince Russo, you know, how true this is, I don't know, but wrote about it in his book that... after WCW events, he would go back to his hotel with some buddies, and they would always turn on the shopping channel and see this lunatic trying to sell stuff. And that was Vince Russo's introduction to Don West, and said this guy would be great doing wrestling. Which is also how he tended to scout talent, was he'd see some hot model and figure, hey, she can be a wrestler.
Yeah, as all this we will later see... exemplified by this show.
Yes. Steamboat announces that he's going to be the referee for the final match in the Gauntlet for the Gold match. Then this was weird, Way. Jeff Jarrett comes out and he buries the main event, stating how stupid it is to crown a champion in a battle royal.
Yeah. It was the first thing he says. He says,
"This is the biggest joke of the NWA title that I've ever witnessed.
This match is ridiculous. The title should not be won in a battle royal." Jeff Jarrett at the time, one of the co-founders of this organization, his very first show, puts down his own main event.
If you were one of the stupid ones who actually bought this pay-per-view, what a sucker, because our main event is going to suck tonight. Jackie Fargo then tells Jarrett to kiss his ass, and he announces that Jarrett will be number one in the battle royal. This leads to Ken Shamrock coming out, and he comes out as a babyface, but before he cuts a babyface promo, he agrees with the heel Jarrett that the concept for the main event sucks tonight, but he's still going to win the title.
Jeff, you're right about how this NWA title match is played out. It sucks.
At this point, I'm thinking, okay.
And he blatantly says, it sucks.
The babyface is stating that this concept put together by this organization is stupid.
Basically, his promo was, this match sucks, but I'm going to beat you anyway.
So we have Jarrett out there. We have Ken Shamrock out there. We have the legends out there. So who comes out next? Scott Hall. And he announces...
Hey, yo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's happening. I'm having flashbacks.
There's that toothpick.
Jeff Jarrett, Ken Shamrock, I agree with you about this battle royal for the belt. It sucks.
Tonight's main event sucks. What the f- fuck was going on here? This was
you both about this battle royal.
Some backstory to this pay-per-view, everybody. Vince Russo was still technically under contract to WCW, and legally he could not work for another organization, but it was very well known that he was helping to write this behind the scenes. At the same time, Jerry Jarrett was mainly the guy that was hired to run things along with Jeff. And Jerry and Vince Russo always clashed heads. And this, to me, just screamed that the Gauntlet for the Gold match was Jerry Jarrett's idea. And Russo got to some of these guys, and they just buried the event live on the pay-per-view. That's my theory. I have nothing to back this up, but it was just... This was clearly a message to somebody who booked that main event, because they were just burying the product, which gives great hope for the longevity of this promotion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, amazingly, it has lasted 8 years, and this was the inaugural show. Thanks for watching. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Our show is going to suck, but sit there and watch anyway.
WrestleMania 1, this event was not shaping up to be in terms of historical significance. So we have all the main talent saying that tonight's main event is going to be horrible. And then we cut to backstage, and we have Goldilocks, who is with Puppet the Midget, who starts yelling that he wants midget blood tonight and is upset about the midget match that's been booked between Tio and Hollywood. And I guess he's upset that he's not in the match. And Goldilocks was horrible here, which seems to be a theme when it comes to broadcasters on this show. It's Ed Ferrara, Don West, and Goldilocks thus far.
Goldilocks, yes. Goldilocks.
That's her name.
Yeah, one of the many women that we would be introduced to in TNA.
Oh, God. There were many more female introductions later in this show, and many that you will probably never heard of since. We then go to our first matchway in TNA history. It's a six-man tag with AJ Styles, Loki, and Jerry Lynn taking on the Flying Elvises, consisting of Sonny Siaki, who was a poor man's Rock, and just making that comparison is making me feel ridiculous. Jorge Estrada, and I know a favorite of yours, Wei, and same for me, Jimmy Yang, who was just released this past week by the WWE.
Correct, yes. The Flying Elvises.
And this was... I guess you could say it was a silly gimmick, but I was into this gimmick, and I thought it was rather funny watching these guys do their high spots and then do these ridiculous Elvis poses, particularly Jimmy Yang. And I thought the six guys in here, they gelled fairly well, particularly Styles and Yang. Whenever they were in the ring, this was excellent. This was something that was very different and something that I enjoyed and was one of the only things I enjoyed on this show. I thought... That by far the best match on the show, though there was zero competition. Some background here. Estrada came out of Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling and was trained by Dusty Rhodes. We saw some high spots here. A running shooting star press by Estrada to Loki. Lynn hit his cradle shock pile driver on Estrada, but Siaki made the save. And then the finish saw Loki accidentally kick Styles. And then Styles takes a twisting corkscrew moonsault by Yang, and Yang gets the win for the Flying Elvises. So on the very first match in TNA history, AJ Styles does a clean job.
Well, I mean, it was to Jimmy Yang, who, even though the gimmick was... I was not a fan of the Elvis gimmick. They all performed incredibly well. All the guys, including Siaki and Estrada, all the offense looked incredibly, incredibly stiff. But, you can tell at this time it was probably everybody's chance. You know, everybody wanted to prove that they were going to not let the bullshit ruin their shot at stuff again. Like so many times in WCW. But what more could you ask for a first match in a brand new promotion?
Yeah, they got about 10 minutes, and 9 times out of 10, I would probably hate some of the gimmicks given out. But to me, giving them the Elvis's gimmick, it wasn't atrocious in my mind, and it was better than sending those three out just cold. So at least you gave them something. Don West just went MIA during this match. I don't think he said a thing. And we immediately...
Which is fine.
I wasn't complaining. I wish Ferrara had a mute button.
No highlights, no anything.
Nothing.
Right after the match.
Just a cut to the next match, and it's...
No. What? A cut to the cage dancers.
Oh, I'm sorry. I put that out. Yes, they had females in cages dancing during this entire thing. For 2 hours, they just danced in cages.
Yeah. After every match, we immediately cut to the dancers. It was like their go-to shot in between matches. Their transition, their wipe.
Then we go to the midget matchway, and it's Tio against Hollywood. And this match was something else. We saw a horrible tilt-a-whirl spot where the tilt-a-whirl was being executed and both of them fell over midway during the spot. And I laughed during that. We saw a 10-punch spot by Tio in the corner, and then he put his crotch right in the face of Hollywood. And somewhere, Mike Tenay compared Tio to Rey Mysterio, and I just covered my ears because I didn't want to think negatively of Mike Tenay.
Oh, well, what he had said was Mike Tenay brought up Rey Mysterio when he was first starting out. His promoter wanted to bill him as a midget wrestler.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah. Anyway, Tio ends up winning what Mike Tenay called a swanton bomb that we're all familiar with. But this was not a swanton bomb, to say the least. What I can compare it to is like we've all taken swimming classes when we were young. When you're taught your dives for the first time, you always tend to belly flop first. There's always a kid who always belly flops and can't dive. This was what this version of the swanton bomb was, just like that.
It's a slopton bomb.
Or a swan...
Slopton bomb, maybe. Anyway, I wrote this down and didn't even realize it when I wrote about this match. I wrote, at least this was short.
Oh.
We then go to more shots of the dancers' way wearing TNA shirts. Mike Tenay then plugs the website for TNA Wrestling. And one of the features is that there are letters from the wrestlers to the fans. I don't know if he made a mistake here, or you could actually go to the website and the wrestlers sit down and write letters to their fans. But I wish I knew, because that would be a great feature.
Well, what do you mean, like a blog? Is that what he meant?
This was pre-blog, so this was 2002. So I pictured diary entries from wrestlers to their fans.
Okay,
dear fans.
Well, we have that now with Twitter.
I guess. Those are more just notes to fans. Those aren't letters. I want, like, full-out, like, diary entries.
Okay, yes. Love, and then a P.S.
Then the highlight way of the entire show. Ed Ferrara and Don West are in the ring to promote
their... There were many highlights.
That's true. Ed Ferrara and Don West are in the ring to promote the Lingerie Battle Royal next week. This was funny because before the prior midget match, Ed Ferrara notes live on pay-per-view, "Are me and Don supposed to get into the ring now?" And they were told, "No, that's the next segment." Veterans here of the industry. So now they're both in the ring. And at this point, I'm just noting, after the X Division match and then this, it's like it's two completely different concepts being put here on this show. And there's no mediator to make sense of this. It's just like it's two products, two visions, and we're going to put it all on one pay-per-view.
Yeah, you know what it was? It was like... It felt like they wanted to incorporate the best parts of the NWA and ECW and Ring of Honor and everything else all into one.
Yeah, it was just we're going to throw tons of shit at the wall and nothing will stick as a result. So they introduced the women. First off, it's Francine who comes out from ECW fame. And my God, does this woman need a sandwich? She looked 95 pounds.
Mm.
Then out came Miss Joni. Are you familiar with Miss Joni?
No, I put a question mark next to
it. I thought China was coming out, and it was not Joni Lauer. Then Don West introduced, from ECW, I mean WCW, Shannon. And it was former WCW valet Daphne, who is now currently in TNA as under the same name. But this was awesome. From ECW, I mean WCW. Then they go to a shot of a girl waiting to come out from backstage, and they show her just standing there, and they announce another woman who comes out from an alternate entrance, and that's Alexis Lurie, better known as Mickie James, who was also canned this past week from the WWE. Then we got a random blonde woman whose name I did not understand, some cheerleader named Aaron, then Elektra from ECW, who looked horrible, a woman named Taylor, and then the final woman is a brunette whose name, again, I did not catch.
Her name was like Teresa? Okay, point taken. Never mind.
I was not rewinding to figure out her name.
Well, who are some of these girls, and why were they given such memorable names, such as Erin?
Erin! Miss Joni! Woman with brunette hair.
Cameraman had no clue who was who, as you'd mentioned, and how could you blame them?
Do you think Mickie James has clearly had some serious work done in the last 8 years, because she looked like a different woman here.
Well, maybe she was still, maturing.
I guess so. Francine cut a horrible promo and says that none of these women belong in the ring. And then Elektra makes the babyface comeback, and her promo was actually worse. And she blames Francine for, quote, single-handedly bankrupting another company. Yes, everyone, it was Francine that led to the fall of ECW. Not TNN canceling ECW, not the pay-per-view companies not getting them their pay-per-view money. Nothing. It was Francine, Way, that led to the death of ECW. They do a catfight spot. Francine tears Elektra's top off, and then they tease that next week Francine's going to do that to the rest of the women, and she says that no one is going to see her in her lingerie as she cuts this promo in the sluttiest outfit you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Bit of a contradiction.
You could just go on Google if you want to see her in lingerie or naked or something. I'm sure there are naked photos of all these women on the internet. But the best part of this segment, John, as Francine walks back up to the ramp, a fan in ringside holds up a sign which reads, ObserverLiveChat.com, with large cutout heads of Dave and Brian on the side.
Oh, that's awesome. How did I not see that?
I don't know. It's just the whole thing. Well, Mike Tenay mentioned the Observer earlier, so
wow,
it's all in the world.
It was a smart crowd, Way.
Yeah.
So after this segment, Way, I thought I saw some of the worst characters that you could ever see on a pay-per-view, and then I was introduced to Mortimer Plumtree, who is a poor man's Jim Cornette. And what can you say about his promo, Way?
Mortimer Plumtree. Story of a life filled with torment. Torment leading to pain. Pain leading to will. Will leading to power. Power allowing me to bring my tag team, who, in our formative years, were my tormentors, now my servants. They do what I tell them to do when I tell them to do it. They wear what I tell them to without questioning, for they know that they owe me their freedom, their livelihoods, their very lives. They don't speak unless I allow them to. They listen only to me, and now I call upon them to once and for all make their presence known in this arena, rewriting the history books of this sport. I give to you my tag team, the Johnson.
Well, I did not watch this show before. I didn't read any rundown, so I had no idea what was to come. I just saw this guy, this Mortimer Plumtree. He was just, he started going on about his story is a story of a life filled with torment. And he's holding this paddle. So immediately I'm thinking, I don't know if this is intentional or not, but I'm getting kind of a weird gay S&M vibe with this dude. Which, you know what, for a heel character, I kind of thought was cool. And then he goes on and he introduces his tag team. He says
His protégés, yes.
His protégés. Well, he says, first of all, these people used to torment him, but now they become his servants. And he introduces his tag team.
It's like a weird S&M vibe here.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. And he introduces his tag team, the Johnsons.
Rod and Dick Johnson, who were better known as the Shane Twins out of Florida and later got hired by the WWE somehow. They would be taking on the team of Psychosis and James Storm, a stranger, oddball team you could not think of.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that as James Storm comes out, Ferrara, in the typical role of an announcer where you're to try and enhance the talent and get them over, notes that he thought that cowboy gimmicks were outlawed after 1992. Fantastic job, Ed Ferrara.
Which is funny, which is hilarious. And then James Storm starts firing off these cap guns. He climbs to the top turnbuckle and he fires these like cap guns that you would play with as a kid. And I thought that was the lamest thing. I thought it was a funny line. But John, please describe the wardrobe of the Johnsons. What did the Johnsons look like?
Well, Way, this was pretty cutting edge for 2002. They were wearing skin colored bodysuits with the same colored masks. So they looked like
two giant cock
without hair. They were pubicless haired penises.
And then the first shot of the audience they cut to is of three little kids booing this mess. The same kids who have been subjected to cage dancers, laundry, battle royals, and now two wrestling penises.
So, Way, that leads us to our match between the Johnsons, Rod and Dick, against James Storm and Psychosis. And I noted Storm worked really, really hard in this match, but there's no way you could take any of this seriously because all it was Ed Ferrara and his own personal competition of how many penis jokes he could make in this six-minute match.
Yeah. How can you take anything seriously? I mean, they had reservoir tips on the tops of their masks.
My God. Ryan Shamrock came out at one point and appeared to be scouting the Dicks, the Johnsons, I'm sorry. And that was pretty much the only storyline in this match. The finish came when Storm ran into the ropes, was tripped by Plumtree, and then the shittiest-looking F5 attempt by one of the Johnsons for the win. So,
it was like a TKO.
Yeah. So, I guess...
So, did Johnson...
I was expecting...
gave it to him.
What's that?
The Johnsons gave it to him.
I was going to go with... the Johnsons were really stiff during the finish because it looked really sloppy.
Oh, I get it.
You realize, Way, if this was 2002, I'd be scooped up by this creative team in a second with a
I'm
line
sure.
like that.
I'm sure you would. You'd be the new Don West.
Afterwards, after the match, the referee gave money to Ryan Shamrock, just putting me at the edge of my seat in intrigue to see where that one goes. Backstage, we're with Goldilocks, who is with the next shitty gimmick, and that's the Dupps and their valet Fluff. And we have Bo Dupp and Stand Up with Fluff Dupp. They start drinking beer, and then Bill Barons comes in and says there's no drinking allowed because we can't have intoxicated wrestlers out there in the ring, which, looking at this roster and some of the past of some of these performers, was an amusing line.
That had to have been, like an inside thing for guys like Hall, who, like, wasn't Hall just released for the airplane incident from the WWE?
Just 2 months prior to this, Way.
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll note one of the Dupps was, of course, Trevor Murdoch, who was a guy out of Dusty Rhodes promotion as well. Probably the only notable guy. The other Dupp, I looked online. I don't even know who the guy was, nor do I know who he is now. Jeremy Borash then introduced our celebrities tonight, Hermie Sadler and Sterling Marlin from NASCAR. And Tanay explains that Marlin is the Winston Cup point leader in NASCAR, and that's the equivalent of being the NWA champion in NASCAR.
Oh, yeah.
They were over to this Alabama crowd. The problem was this was on national pay-per-view, and I don't know if it necessarily translated, but NWA TNA was definitely going the southern route on this pay-per-view when it came to their celebrities. And then we got a serious interview about their NASCAR shit. And, what's this doing?
They were going every route, John. Like, we pretty much, in the first 45 minutes of this promotion's existence, we've seen them cater to every wrestling demographic out there.
If you like hardcore shit, if you like midgets, if you like X Division stuff, if you like women tearing their clothes off, if you like NASCAR, every demographic was covered, and none of them were satisfied, I'm assuming, with the exception of that X Division match. I had no interest in them talking about NASCAR.
So I'm thinking, why are we watching this dry, no-personality human being speak on this show that I, assumed to have paid to watch? And then we get R-Truth interrupting.
In case you wanted some racial overtones in your wrestling product, that's what this brought. As Ron Killings came out, and we got a promo where he kept talking about his kind and your kind to the NASCAR drivers and what says, each style of person does in each sport.
He says, my kind are athletes. We play basketball. We throw footballs. Your kind drive in a circle continuously. My grandma can do what you do. I know that. I thought he was awesome. I know that this probably wouldn't fly really anywhere these days, but I just thought this was hilarious. Basically, what TNA did, they had this shitty redneck gimmick out there, and they had a heel come down and break it up, which I thought, for me, I absolutely enjoyed.
Awesome.
And if all the white supremacists are satisfied too. The evil black thug versus the heroic NASCAR driver. And then, of all people, the person to come in for the save, because the grandmaster, sorry, what happened? Ron Killings and one of the NASCAR drivers start to get into it. And the person, of all people, to come in for the save, Grandmaster Sexay.
Who has been mimicking rappers as his gimmick.
Yeah, so to save the white guys from the black guy, we have a white guy who tries to dress and talk like a black guy.
This was horrible. It's even worse looking back on it.
It was so weird.
So we have another feud to look forward to, that being Ron Killings and Brian Christopher. Backstage we go, and Jeff Jarrett and Jackie Fargo are being pulled apart from one another. And then it's time for our next match. It's a tag match with Christian York and Joey Matthews, who we reviewed a couple of weeks ago as part of ECW, working against Bo and Stand Up with their valet Fluffed Up. And the gimmick here, Way, is that Fluffed Up is both the cousin and girlfriend of the Dups.
That's the gimmick.
All I noted here was there was a botched tornado DDT by York to Stand Up and then attempts a moonsault, but Fluff crotches York and Stan grabs the tights for the win. So the comedy team beats the legit workers. Not that, Trevor Murdoch is actually a fairly good worker, but this was just a throwaway. It's like all the comedy gimmicks were going, the Johnsons go over. What, are we going to get a big Dup versus Johnsons feud?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Thing is, I don't know if they intended for these to be comedy acts. I mean, yeah, sure, their names were comedic, but that was just a byproduct of a poor decision making. I think they truly wanted these workers to be workers. They just gave them terrible, terrible, stupid comedic gimmicks that were not funny.
Next up on the checklist of how to book a shitty pay-per-view was a live concert, which is what we got with Toby Keith. Toby Keith came out, and a legitimate story, Way, which of course TNA didn't mention on this fucking pay-per-view. Toby Keith was booked by TNA to perform here. He was then contacted by the White House to play at the White House on this night, and he turned it down because of his prior commitment to TNA. Now,
wow.
I do not believe this story, but it's the story I've been told and the story that they have actually, Toby Keith mentioned on some TNA DVD. I do not believe it. But if that is true, I would have made mention in my 2-hour pay-per-view that the President of the United States could not get this entertainment that we are providing you. Anyway.
Oh, and yes, it was truly entertainment.
Well, thankfully, it was interrupted by Jeff Jarrett, who shoved past Toby Keith, and Toby Keith looked pissed in his jacked-up-looking frame.
It was fantastic. I mean, it was like the Ron Killing thing. I was like, am I going to get another one of these redneck segments with this guy blasting his American pro-war propaganda? And then Jarrett just comes out and cuts the song off, and I'm just like, I'm sold. This is awesome.
I thought, Way, that this was going to build to a feud where Toby Keith was going to come into the promotion, and then the Johnsons would bring in their favorite band, the Dixie Chicks, who were feuding with Toby Keith at the time, and we'd have a sing-off.
You should quit your job right now.
Wish it was 2002, Way.
Yeah, you should.
I think
I could
run
DNA.
This company. No problem. Yeah.
Send it to Dixie right now.
Oh.
You'll be... Oh, God.
The band could have been Dixie's Chicks.
Oh, Jesus. We did not pre-script any of this, ladies and gentlemen.
This is everyone. I'm trying to convey this to you that this is Vince Russo's philosophy, that when he comes up with something clever like we and Wei just did, that's an angle. That's greenlit. Because something's cute. Something makes it's punny. Oh, let's get to
this. These chicks.
It's now the gauntlet for the gold battle royal. And this depressed me, Wei, because I saw on my computer screen that there were 45 minutes left in this show for this battle royal.
Mm-hmm.
Not great. Jeff Jarrett is number one, as per Jackie Fargo's orders. Number two was Buff Bagwell, and this was not a good start. We have the 90-second countdown clock on the screen for the entire time, so in case you wanted to pay attention to the crappy work going on in the ring, you didn't have to. Bagwell hits the blockbuster, but then all of a sudden just takes a backdrop by Jarrett, and he's eliminated.
Oh, the best use of Bagwell ever. Right beforehand, no promo, just toss this fucker out of there for a spot and then toss him right out.
Number three in our WCW Retro Battle Royal was Lash LaRue, who Mike Tenay noted was the 1998 WCW Rookie of the Year, and I do not recall this at all. Borash announces all of the entrants coming in, and the eliminations as well, in case you were maybe watching this pay-per-view with a scrambled screen. Jeremy Borash was making it easy for you here. LaRue was then eliminated pretty quickly. Next up, in the Evolution, the alternative product, we got Norman Smiley. And it was feeling very, very retro at this point, Wei. If you want to chime in at all, Wei, I didn't make any big notes here.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that instead of having these guys wrestle matches, they gave them these very, very easy paydays, which, you know, like, I mean, for most of these guys, but like Lash LaRue, he's a very good worker. Instead, we got the Johnsons wrestle a real match. Number four, that was Norman Smiley. He lasts only 65 seconds. And then we have Apollo as entrant number five.
Who was not subject to any wellness policy during this event.
No.
He actually lasted right till the end. Ron Killings is number six, and he comes in and he saves Jeff Jarrett, who is being press slammed by Apollo. And the announcers even brought this point up: why would you save somebody in a battle royal? And Ferrara then notes that Jarrett has been in all the way from the beginning of this match. And then I did some math, and with the 90-second intervals, with the sixth entrant in, we are at the 6-minute mark of the match. Ed Ferrara, I think the Iron Man title can be saved for a little later in the match than 6 minutes in. Number seven is Slash, who's accompanied by Father Jim Mitchell.
Let me just interject. Sorry, were you going to say something with Slash?
I was just going to note that Don West asks if we got a good look at this Mitchell guy, and then Tanay mentions that he's actually pretty well known from ECW and WCW. He's not a new character.
All right. Well, at this point, John, I just watched the show right now. I was in my hotel room, and I was sitting in bed watching the show on my laptop. I was very comfortable, and I started dozing off, actually. I mean, not much was happening. There weren't any eliminations. I wake up, and Scott Steiner is in the ring. a muscular, bleached, blonde dude with the Superman logo on his shorts. Scott Steiner has just entered this battle royal. Oh, okay, well, they got Scott Steiner. And the camera pans over. And I realize, this is not Scott Steiner. This is a guy dressed up as Scott Steiner.
Del Rios.
They make no mention of Scott Steiner whatsoever. Here he is, just a Scott Steiner impersonator with no explanation given, complete with his belly-to-belly suplex and everything. It was just so weird.
I wrote down, I thought this was Scott Steiner coming out. Del Rios, actually, for you mid-90s fans of the WWE, worked as Fantasio the Magician in the WWE, where some of his tricks included removing the boxer shorts of referees during his matches. Number nine was Wei's favorite, former favorite band, Justice. And did this guy click at all to you, Wei? Justice?
Not because of the band, but yes, he looked very much like current DNA performer Abyss.
Well, I'm glad you made the connection there, because it took me a few minutes before I started working, and he started working, and I realized, wait a minute, that was a shitty-looking black hole slam that I see every Thursday or Monday. Anyway, so yes, Abyss was in. Next up was Conan. Number 11 was Bruce from the Rainbow Express, who was introduced by a very slimmed-down Joel Gertner, who comes out and cuts a promo introducing the gay tandem of Lenny and Bruce, Lenny Lane and Bruce, who looked to be Alan Funk, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes, formerly Queewee.
Yes. Next up was Rick Steiner, the real Steiner that showed up, who got a gigantic pop from the audience, and they booked him like a monster, eliminating Slash and Justice.
So here you have Rick Steiner in there with an impersonator of his brother.
Amazing. Next up was Malice. What are with these names? Malice, Slash, Justice. Malice was formerly The Wall in WCW, and he eliminates Bruce, Ron Killings, Del Rios, Conan, Rick Steiner, and Apollo. He was just booked like a insane.
Yeah, they had high hopes for this guy.
Yes.
The Wall.
The next entrant was Scott Hall, who Mike Tenay noted left the WWE recently on a mutual agreement. Yeah, it was mutual among the WWE executives who decided to fire him. At this point, Toby Keith runs in, delivers a vertical suplex to Jeff Jarrett, and then Toby Keith, who's never coming back, and Scott Hall throw Jeff Jarrett out of the ring.
This was amazing to me, though, John. This is Toby Keith. Toby Keith delivers a delayed vertical suplex, a picture perfect.
Kenta Kobashi-style vertical suplex.
Yes, I mean, the British Bulldog, whatever, nobody could have done a better vertical suplex. And the guy did it with so much confidence. He just ran in there, looked at the camera, the hard camera, right in the eye, picked up Jarrett, held him up there for a good 2-3 seconds, and then just left the ring.
This guy missed it. This guy missed his calling in life. Because he was a worker through and through. I couldn't believe it.
Normally with the celebrity spots, they have them come in with a Lawrence Taylor football tackle. That would be the most that you would do. But this is Toby Keith, who was supposed to play at the White House that day, comes in here, delivers a perfect delayed vertical suplex onto Jeff Jarrett. I thought that was amazing.
This I'm not going to crap on, because this was their attempt to get on to like other news outlets and stuff, because that highlight is what, you know, an ESPN might run. So it was worth it for the company. And you also did attach Scott Hall with him, which is not the guy I would have picked, but that was who they were building up to face Jarrett next week. From there, Chris Harris comes in. And at this point, I'm noting Tanae is doing a fantastic job of at least introducing some of these guys and giving some background. Vampire Warrior runs out, formerly Gangrel. He's followed up by Devin Storm, Steve Corino, Ken Shamrock, and the number 20 is Brian Christopher, who sadly was one of the top babyfaces in the early days of this promotion, which I've never understood this guy having a career in wrestling. But Christopher knocks out Devin Storm, Chris Harris, and Vampire Warrior, and then eliminates Corino on top of that. Then Shamrock eliminates Brian Christopher, and we're down to Ken Shamrock, Malice, Scott Hall, and Apollo. Malice eliminates Apollo, and then Malice backdrops Scott Hall over the top. But interestingly enough, the camera cuts away, so we don't see Scott Hall going over the top rope. I would like to say that was Scott Hall being smart, but I would more guess it was TNA being very amateur on their directing.
Yeah.
So, way that brings us down to Ken Shamrock and Malice to determine the NWA champion, with Ricky Steamboat as the referee. Shamrock hadn't worked a wrestling match since 1999, and this was 4 months after a very brutal fight with Don Fry and Pride, and prior to his first fight with Tito Ortiz. We see a cross arm breaker by Shamrock, and Malice is tapping, but it's not acknowledged as a finish, and they do this long tease where Malice grabs the ropes, and to me, I hate that spot when they do an arm breaker, because You've been an arm bar, like, even at that point, I think people are aware that if it's locked, you're tapping. There's none of this delayed, oh, I can reach the ropes. It just never works for me. So we get the long tease by the heel, no less, who makes the babyface recovery spot. Then we see an ankle lock applied. Malice reaches the ropes, but Shamrock pulls him back. And they're booking Shamrock as a heel, arguing with Steamboat. And Malice is the babyface refusing to give up. And then Shamrock counters a choke slam and hits, of all moves, a belly-to-belly suplex for the pin. And he is your NWA champion, Way.
In the midst of the celebration, the camera cuts to the commentators, and Ed Ferrara, He says, wow, these guys are so tough. Picking a fight with either Shamrock or The Wall, he calls him The Wall. The Wall is like competing in the Special Olympics. And at this point, you can just see the look on Wes and Panini's face, just thinking, what is going to come out of this guy's mouth? Ferrara says, even if you win, you got to be retarded. And Panay and Wes just look at him with the blankest stare in the midst of this celebration.
You know, when you talk about a guy like Ken Shamrock, either him or The Wall, I mean, you want to get into a fight with these two guys, it's like running in the Special Olympics. You want to get in a fight with him? Even if you win, you got to be retarded to do it.
At a moment like this, that's the reference that you're going to make.
Wow.
We are actually super out of time here, Wei. We're actually on a bit of a time issue here at the studio.
No
so we'll
worries.
Quickly end this. We are going to get to all of your feedback next week. We have a lot of feedback from last week, so we'll do a giant mailbag next week. But quickly, just to end the show, they did a pull apart with Jackie Fargo and Toby Keith being separated from Jeff Jarrett. And then Jarrett comes out. He shoves Bob Armstrong and Dory Funk Jr. Fargo comes out to go after Jarrett, and then they go off the air teasing Jeff Jarrett and Scott Hall for next week, which was enough incentive for me not to want to buy this follow-up pay-per-view. And quickly, Wei, I'm giving this a 2 out of 10. Your thoughts?
Well, in terms of entertainment value, this was highly, highly entertaining for my money, which was a 0. So I give it an 8 out of 10.
All right. And for next week, Wei, I decided to go back. We got some requests for Slamboree events, the WCW pay-per-view in May, as next week will be our first May-themed event. So I was going back, and a lot of people had suggested Slamboree 98. I looked at the listings, and I just did not want to put myself through 1998 WCW. So I'm actually going to pick, because it ties in with where I was this past week, Slamboree 1993, a Legends reunion featuring matches from Legends, as well as the current WCW roster. So we're going to do that. And something in your favor, Wei, it's only a two-hour pay-per-view.
Thank you, thank you. Well, this was only an hour 45, and I still fell asleep. But anyway, to end off this show, John, I would like to go off with the person who delivered the biggest markup moment for me in a long time on Review Away, Mr. Toby Keith, and the song he performed on this show, The Angry American.
Awesome stuff. We'll be back next week with a longer edition of Review Away and tons of your feedback. Go to reviewaway.com on our Facebook group. And, of course, we always encourage you guys to give us your requests of future events and drop us a line of what you thought of this week's show or anything in general. We will get to your comments next week. So thanks to everyone for listening. And I hear Toby Keith, and that's what we're going out with.
Recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men dead. So we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our head. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A.
Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. Courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Oh, 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 of the red, white, and blue.